Thank you very much. I want to call to order the Housing, Finance, and Policy informational hearing. And I thank you all for coming. I know it's a Friday afternoon and wintry, but we're very grateful for you here because we have some serious issues to talk about. Let me just give a little tiny bit of background. The reason we're having this hearing is because it's come to my attention in the last few months in particular that there's some very serious issues that renters are facing in the Twin Cities for sure, and maybe other areas, I'm not sure, but that have to do with difficulty being able to have access to their rental contracts, things that are pretty clearly discrimination, it sounds like, when I've talked with the commissioner, who we're going to be hearing from today. And so I wanted to just have a little background. We need to turn it up. Can you hear? Hard to hear. Okay. Sure, I guess Abu want to try to turn it up a little bit. Meanwhile, I guess we should all speak louder, more loudly. All right. I was just saying that we're going to have this hearing, and we want to start out with a little bit of background. Commissioner, do you have a time limit? We heard you a little bit later in the agenda, but did you want to start?
No, I'm at your disposal here. If you want me to go at the beginning or you want me to stay and listen to comments,
actually,
I'm happy to actually listen to all the comments and then sort of respond.
If you wouldn't mind, that's kind of the way we had planned it. So we're going to start out with a little bit of background, but I'm so happy you're here, really. You're a very important resource, and it was very helpful for me to talk with you before this hearing, so thank you. We want to start with a very brief description from Minnesota Housing Finance Agency about this current state of the residential market. One of the reasons this is such a serious issue is because of the tight rental market, particularly here. And since we're starting late, I want to ask you to be as brief, but as clear as you want. And I'm also going to talk very briefly about a memo that we all should have before us too, that is provided by Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. But why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Ms. Kaplan, and we'll hear from you. She's our representative of Minnesota Housing Finance Agency today. The commissioner could not be with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me? Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Margaret Kaplan. I'm the Community Development Director at Minnesota Housing, and I've been asked to provide a little bit of background information about rental housing trends in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, as well as some greater Minnesota information to provide some background and context, and because we're a statewide agency, I wanted to pull that in there. First of all, as you're all aware, our mission is to finance affordable housing for low and moderate income households while fostering strong communities. This slide seems to not have worked. So Minnesota Housing Finance Agency in 2013 invested nearly $782 million and served 63,000 households, including 16,000 households that benefited from homeownership and home improvement programs in the last year. We have total assets of $3.15 billion. The trends I'm going to talk about today are related to the number of rental households, the number of cost burden renters, vacancy rates, rents, a little bit of information about the dynamics of the shadow market and existing rent-restricted units, and some information about current affordable housing production trends. So the trends in rental households. Minnesota has historically had a high level of home ownership, and while this remains true, rental households are a major part of the growth across the state in households, far outpacing gains in homeowners, which grew by about 7% statewide. When you look at the state, actually the highest level of rental in the state is Minneapolis, which has about 53% rental. In the Twin Cities metropolitan area as a whole, it's about 32%. And in Minnesota, it's 28%. Housing cost burden households. There has been a significant increase in the number of rental households that are experiencing cost burden. So renter households are considered cost burden when they're paying more than 30% of their monthly income to rent. And when you look at the increases, they have existed in both the Twin Cities metropolitan area and the state of Minnesota as a whole. So now, no matter where you're looking in the state, nearly 50% of rental households are housing cost burdened. And part of the reason for this is when you look at vacancy rates, and this is just looking at the Twin Cities metropolitan area because that's where we can get sort of that finest level of detail, vacancy rates are at remarkably low levels. So a healthy rental housing market typically has vacancy rates of around 5%. But as you can see, vacancy rates, regardless of whether you're looking for a studio, one, two, or three bedroom in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, are 2.5% or below. So this is creating a lot of pressure on households, whether they're lower income or higher income, but a lot of that burden does fall on lower income households. And note that these figures are from the Marquette Advisors Apartment Trends Report. So it provides data primarily for the larger apartment buildings and excludes what we call the shadow market. So the shadow market, I'll just say a little word about that. That is the market of single-family rentals, duplexes, sort of the smaller mom-and-pop landlords who are renting out individual units. And in a moment, I'll talk about what percentage of our total rental housing market in the Twin Cities is comprised of that shadow market. As you can see from here, the median rents for the third quarter in 2014 have increased since 2013 in the shadow market. So those single family rentals and condo rentals has increased by about 6%. For the apartment market, so those larger buildings, it's increased by about 4%. But if you look at those numbers, you can tell that for many lower income households, rental housing in the Twin Cities metropolitan area is pretty far out of reach. So another thing that I think plays into this dynamic, that shadow market I talked about, as we've kind of crossed over the peak of the foreclosure crisis and are emerging out of the Great Recession, more and more of those single-family homes that were rentals are becoming home ownership opportunities. And so the number of units that are available on the housing, on the shadow housing market, have declined. So at their peak, 56% of the rental housing market was the shadow market, but that's been going down and it's now in the low 40s. So the number of existing rent-restricted units, and these are restricted at a variety of income levels. Some of them are at 30% or below AMI. Some of them are at 50 or 60% AMI. Right now, in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, there are about 57,000 rent-restricted units. When you think about the total number of rental households, that's 369,125 units. So about 16% of that total amount of rental housing stock is rent-restricted. But if you think back to those data points about housing cost burden households, clearly there's a need for more affordable rental housing in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And that's true for Greater Minnesota as well. So there are a total of 603 rental households. About 100,000 are rent-restricted units, so about 17%. We have seen an increase in the production of rental housing. It's increased significantly since the height of the Great Recession. As you can see, from 2009 to 2011, the number of new units across all price levels that were created was between 1,000 and 2,000 annually. But starting in 2012, we saw a significant increase. So almost 6,000 units in the Twin Cities metropolitan area and about 7,000 units in the state. It took a slight dip in 2013, but it appears that the production of rental housing continues to be fairly strong. So the question is, how much of that is going to be affordable for low and moderate income households? Finally, just to give you a little bit of context for the work that Minnesota Housing is doing in the state to try and sort of increase the pool of rental housing stock. In 2014, because we had sort of the historic level of housing infrastructure bonds available, $80 million, and thank you so much to the state of Minnesota for putting that in, we were able to finance 3,657 units of multifamily housing. Now, that's a combination of both preservation of current federally assisted affordable housing and new construction. That represents 43 projects that we finance statewide. And for the multifamily piece of this, of the $80 million in housing infrastructure bonds, a little over 71 million went into the production and preservation of multifamily housing. At any rate, so if people have questions or want more information, here is my contact information, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Kaplan. I really appreciate it. That's just the context we wanted to have to go forward, and we have quite a few people here who want to testify, so I think we'll go right into the testimony. Let's see. Our first testifier is Mariano Espinosa. And what we're going to talk about here is that issue of housing difficulties that are happening for renters who are undocumented. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Clark and members of the committee. So I want to
introduce yourself first, if you wouldn't mind. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Mariano Espinosa, and I work for the City of Minneapolis with the Neighborhood and Community Relations. So today I want to paint the picture today of one of the community that is most affected by this problem that we are facing. And this is a very complex situation due to the immigration status that many of our Minnesota residents face. I'm using some data from the Migration Policy Institute. This is one of the top research institutes in the country. The White House is using this data in the Department of Homeland and Security. It is estimated that in Minnesota, we have about 91,000 Minnesotans who don't have an immigration status. They are undocumented. The top countries are Mexico. They represent 46% of the entire undocumented population. And the second country that is a large country that have 4% of the undocumented population is Thailand. Many people in Minnesota doesn't believe in that. They don't think that many people from Thailand is undocumented. So they represent a very high percentage of the undocumented population. Mexicans represent about 60% of the entire undocumented population. And you need to understand who they are, because when we are facing discrimination, this is related to the immigration status, but also to the language barriers that we face. Many of the residents have been living in Minnesota for a long, long time. 62% of all the undocumented population have lived in Minnesota for less than 10 years. And this is one of the groups that are being affected the most, because they're new to the community and also because the language barrier. Many of those families live in a mixed status families. That means that in the family, we might have a dad or mom who are not documented, but one might be a U.S. citizen, one might have a good immigration status, might be a legal permanent resident. So we have very diverse families. The language is one of the other barriers that we face. 10% of the undocumented population speak English only, so that is key for you. And about 44% of the undocumented population speak not English at all. So almost 50%, very high percentage, they don't speak any English. And we have contact. Many people that are being abused because they are not able to communicate properly when they are trying to rent a house in Minnesota. Also, 67% of our undocumented population, they live in a rental place in Minnesota. only 33% of the undocumented population live in a place where they own or they live with someone who owns the house. So that is very quick, you know, the numbers. I want to tell you and share with you really quick the story about one resident in Minneapolis. This is Angel Almeida. Angel lived in Minnesota for more than 20 years. And he lived in 5710 Boston Terrace in Minneapolis. About a year ago, he was looking for a place in Minneapolis. He's married with two children. And he was looking in one of the Latino newspapers and saw this advertising for to rent a rental place in South Minneapolis. He called the number and someone answered in Spanish. He set up an appointment and he was told that he needed to have an income with less than $50,000 a year to qualify for this rental unit, and he paid $70 for the rental application. A few days later, Angel was called and he was told that the rental unit was for him. He was approved and he was very happy. He went to meet with the landlord, signed a contract, paid the deposit, $300, and paid 1 month. 4 days before he moved into his new place, he was called again. So Angel wondered why they were calling him. And a person in Spanish called him and said, your social security number is not valid. You don't qualify for this place unless you pay $350 more. So Angel agreed to do this because he didn't have another place or a different place to move it with his family and children. So he made the deposit, and then a few weeks after, the toilet was broken. Angel called the manager of the building and he was told that he needed to pay $300 to replace the toilet. Angel said, no, I believe that you need to pay for the maintenance, and they agreed to $150 to pay to replace the toilet. And about 80% of the Latinos living in this complex, which is about 70 apartments, are facing very similar condition as Angel. This past Monday, he received a letter where he was informed that the rent was increasing and he needed to renew the contract. So he told the manager that he didn't agree with that. The following day, on Tuesday morning, he received a letter and he was told that he needs to move from the apartment by January 30th, 2015. So this is a very similar story that many people is facing when they don't have a social security number. And we here today, we have more stories and testimonies to hear. So I don't want to take more time. I just believe that this is a good opportunity for us to figure out how we can help many, many thousands of people in Minnesota that are affected by this issue. But also I want to highlight that the Latino community is not the only community affected by this. We have many other people that are non-Latinos and they are facing discrimination based on color, religion, and language. But if you need to have more information or more data for you, please let me know and I'll be happy to answer any question.
Thank you very much. Any questions, committee members? Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Espinosa. Appreciate your testimony. Next, I believe it's Rosa Francisco and Luz is accompanying you, I believe, to help.
Hello.
Welcome to the committee, and if you will each introduce yourself, please.
Mi nombre es Rosa Francisco.
My name is Rosa Francisco. My name is Lourdes de la Luz. I'm going to be the interpreter.
Thank you.
Yo tengo 20 años aquí.
I have 20 years living here.
Soy madre de tres hijos.
I'm a single mother of three children.
He sido discriminada por no tener un seguro social.
I have been discriminated for not having a social security number.
Por rentar un apartamento.
To rent a one-bedroom apartment.
Es difícil cuando no tiene un seguro social porque vas, aplicas un apartamento.
It's hard to apply for a one-bedroom apartment when you don't have a social security number.
Cuando llegas, aplicas, ellos no te preguntan si tienes un seguro.
When you go apply, they don't directly ask you for your social security number.
Llenas la aplicación, pagas lo que es la aplicación, dos o tres días después te llaman, te dicen que no tienes, si tienes un seguro para poder, porque no calificas si no tienes un seguro.
When you get there and you fill out the application and then you pay the fee, then later on they call you that you don't qualify to get the apartment.
Y yo le pregunto por qué no me dijo antes de que llenara la aplicación para saber si aplicaba o no aplicaba, porque perdí mi dinero que es de la aplicación.
So I asked the lady before filling out the application why didn't she tell me that I didn't qualify and I just lost my money.
Y solo ellos contestan, oh, no sabía, yo pensé que tenías un seguro social. Y
And all the answer is, oh, I thought you had a social security number.
Y no te puedo regresar tu dinero porque ese dinero fue usado para el proceso de la aplicación.
And I can't return the money because it was used for the process of the application.
En otra ocasión, fui a aplicar para un apartamento. Como mi hija es mayor de edad, quería que llené dos aplicaciones.
In another situation, I went to apply for another apartment, and then because my daughter is older, she had to fill out both two applications.
Y ellos preguntaron, yo le dije, pero ¿por qué ella va a aplicar si ella es menor? Está mi responsabilidad, ella no trabaja. Ellos me dijeron, ella es adulta, tiene que aplicar.
I asked them, why does she have to pay if she's only 18 years old and she doesn't work and she's under my responsibility?
Y ellos me dijeron, no importa, tiene que aplicar ella.
And then they said, no, it doesn't matter, she has to apply.
Okay, yo le dije, está bien, voy a llenar la aplicación. ¿Cuánto va a ser cada aplicación? Me dijo, $50 cada aplicación.
So then I said, okay, that's fine. So how much money would it pay for both? And then he said $50 for each person.
Y llené la aplicación y después me dice, oh, ¿tienes un seguro social? Le dije, no. Y me dijo, oh, ¿puedes poner un ET number?
So when I fill out the application, he told me if I had a social security number. I said no. So then he told me, do you have an IT number?
Y yo le dije que sí, y yo le puse el IT number, y una semana después me dijo, oh, en tres días te voy a, tienes el apartamento, ya lo viste, está bonito y todo.
So then, after I said that I had an IT number, he said, put it on the application, and then week later, you went to see the apartment and see if you liked it, and if it was cleaned.
Y después me dijo que tenía que dar un depósito de $300 para que apartaran el apartamento.
And then I had to give a deposit of $300 to rent the space.
Y yo le di el dinero porque necesitaba para poder rentar y porque necesitaba que un apartamento.
I gave him the $300 for deposit because I needed the apartment and I needed to move quickly.
Y después cuando me llaman, ellos me dijeron que no calificaba ni por el IT number y porque no tenía un seguro social. Y pues lo sentía mucho y yo le pregunté, ¿dónde está mi depósito?
So then they called me and they told me that I don't qualify even if I put the IT number, and because I didn't have a social security number. Then I told them what happened with my $300 of deposit.
Y me dijeron, oh, es que ese es el tiempo que llevó el proceso para poder tomar el tiempo de buscar, chequear tus papeles.
And all they said that it was the time that it took to, so the process of the application was, so it was the process for the application.
Y pues yo le dije que tenía que quería mi depósito porque tenía que buscar otro lado para poder agarrar, y ellos me dijeron, no hay depósito, no te vamos a regresar nada porque no tienes nada.
So then I told them, why, how come is this impossible if I need the $300 for deposit because I need to find another place. So then they say, I won't give you anything, there is no deposit.
Y pues por falta de información, ellos en un papel que ellos me demostraron, yo firmé, sí, porque venía en inglés, no tenía nadie que me traduciera, y dijo que yo estaba firmando que yo les estaba dando ese dinero para poder mostrar que ellos iban a revisar mi récord.
They showed me a paper where, because of the lack of education or not informed and because of the language, they made me sign some paperwork in English that I didn't understand, saying that I was giving them the $300.
Y eso fue lo que ellos me dijeron. Oh, usted firmó un papel diciendo que estos $300 era para buscar toda su información, pero no me lo iban a regresar.
And in the application it said that all, because she signed all those $300 was to see for the paper applications process, and they were not going to give it back to her.
Y eso fue como para mí muy frustrante porque no puedo pelear mis derechos.
And for me that's very frustrating because I can't fight for my rights.
Ese fue mi historia. Hay muchos más, pero eso es todo.
That was my story, and as me, there's many more out there. That's it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Scott. Really appreciate your sharing that. Any questions, comments from committee members? Appreciate it. I think we're seeing a pattern, and we'll continue on with the other testimony. Is Javier Reyes here yet? No? I know he was coming a little bit later. Okay. Rosita Salas? No, she's not. Shadi. Okay. Jovita Morales.
Hello, my name is Jovita Morales, and I'm also a person, immigrant, who are facing the same discriminations or lack of renting apartments, but also working as a community organizer with the community and hearing a lot of the stories of the same. So I have a lady who... I have her story that she couldn't come and share the story, but I'm going to share a little bit. From her, Rosita Salas, she had an rent an apartment on Park Avenue and Franklin Avenue between that, and she's the landlord told her, or the manager told her, that she will get the apartment she went to see on the second floor. And then after she see the apartment, then they made it in the office and saying that to pay half of the deposit in the rent. So she paid the half of the rent, and then later she say that she will go to the office and drop the other half of money. And then she went over there and she asked again, I want to see the apartment because my husband wants to see it. And then they are older, they're like maybe 40, 60 years old, and And then she went and the manager showed another apartment that which it wasn't the apartment that they showed up. It was in the basement. And she said that the condition of the basement was so bad. It was smelled really bad. The wall of the bathroom, it was with mold. And she didn't like it. And she said, no, you know, I don't want this apartment. You, someone told me that, show me the other apartment. So I want the other apartment. I don't want this apartment. And then it says, no, this is the apartment because the other apartment is already rented by other families. So then she requested her deposit again, and then she the person told her that she's not gonna get that deposit because she didn't have any contract. And so she went with me as a community organizer, and we was fighting. We went to the city and look it up and investigate, but we found that the manager, it was another landlord. So we couldn't find the real manager or the owner of the building because they were sent to place to place. So finally she get half of the deposit, but she didn't get all the deposit. So it was a challenge for her and for me to fight her rights and get the money back. And the other situation that I have with other family members is Reina, who her apartment, she has two children, one 18 years old and one 9 years old, that she's been living for 18 years in the apartment on 32nd and 23 Avenue, and she's been asking many times for the condition of the building, the mold. It has a lot of mold. The carpet has been bad conditions, and she's been asking. And also the building, she say she pay $200 for gas and water. And that's and then she later she found out that other people who live in the apartment, they requested some of them, they paid $300 and $250, $150 for the same amount. And we found that the building, it's only one bill that they pay for the gas and the water. So they're taking money off each one of the apartments that they have. And there are three floors, and each one of the floor has like maybe 5 or 7 apartments. So she after 18 years, she been changed her carpet. But imagine for 17 years, she's been requested to change the carpet, and because they pay the rent and they pay the utilities. So many times when they have challenge of the fixing the stove, fixing the water, I mean, it's a challenge. But now she said that after she was fighting for her rights to pay less than that of gas and water, now she pay like $40. But then that's happened like in a month ago. Now she say that the landlord is going up. Now they're asking for $50 to pay the water and gas. So for the other families, it's been a challenge. So they're moving into those apartments, even they have children, with the weather conditions, I mean the cold weather, and they have to find an apartment in a different apartment. So it's been a really challenge. Personally, that's the whole story about those two stories that I know. Personally, I have my own story. I have two children, two young children. My daughter, she's 18. I came to the USA without knowing that I was coming over here, so I didn't know those challenges to find. And so to rent an apartment for me and my partner, it's a little bit hard to. We've been paying a lot of the applications to find an apartment, and it's they charging you, and they don't. And even if you are, I ask myself, do you request a social security number, so I don't have to waste my time to apply for application and pay the application for later. They're gonna say no, so they say no. Sometimes they say you don't have to have a social security number, but then later they're telling you have to have a social security number, and I pay like a bunch of money, wasting my money, and imagine that I don't my minimum wage is really low, so I can't afford to pay and pay for applications. So that's basically my story, and that's a story of huge other community that the same are facing situations. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Ms. Morales, any questions, comments from committee members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to know in a specific sense, but in a general sense, who are these landlords we're talking about, and what type of housing are we talking about here?
You want to take a crack at that? And I know we're going to have someone from the one of the neighborhoods try to address that in a moment, but go ahead, Ms. Morales, if you want to try to answer.
So you mean that to rent, when who are we renting? Mm-hmm.
What kind of landlords are we talking about is the question.
So, for instance, in the building, it's a building apartment. It's I don't know if it's, you mean talking with the people, the person?
Where they're located? Maybe the neighborhood is located in?
I'm sorry?
Maybe the neighborhoods that you're talking about, is this more in the one neighborhood? Is it? Looks like we have someone who might want to join in on that conversation. Did you have anything you want to say? Otherwise, we'll.
Sorry, my English is this the third language that I have, so I have to figure out what exactly. But okay. Sorry.
I could maybe answer that. My name is Matt Bartholomew. I'm going to be the next person testifying. By the way, thanks for having me. But as far as the buildings go, most of them, with my experience, are maybe like, I don't know, 10 to 15 unit apartment buildings that are owned by property companies. And that's from my experience. I can't speak to what Jovita's folks have been going through, but I know that's my experience.
So yeah, the for instance, the story, the first story with Rosita, when we found it's it's like a company that they have. My experience is the owner, it was an owner that you never know who is it, and then they hire people to rent a different to manage different apartments, and one of those apartments contract another person who is, they called the manager, and that's the manager who take the information, and her experience, it was with white people that he said that was the manager, and then the manager find the other manager on behalf of that, and then we never find who was the owner of the building.
Representative Anderson.
Again, Madam Chair, just to follow up, are we talking about, you know, private housing, Section 9 housing? What type of housing?
So the question is this publicly subsidized housing or just privately owned housing? The housing,
from my experience, it's been privately owned housing.
Okay.
And for instance, the apartments that I've been asking for social security number, it's in Ridgefield that I used to live in before. It's they call Buena Vista building.
Okay, so we're talking about Ridgefield, Minnesota, for example. Okay. Any other comments, questions? Okay, well, thank you so much, Ms. Riley. I really appreciate it. And Ms. Bethany, I think you wanted to make a few more comments, and why don't you say a little bit more about who you are.
So thanks for having me, everybody. My name is Matt Bartholomew. I live in the Whittier neighborhood of Minneapolis, which is home to Eat Street, MIA, and a lot of other places that you might know. So I'm coming here because I really like my neighborhood, and I like a strong community. And I've been, for the past about 2 years, so I moved there about 3.5 years ago. For the past 2 years, I've been involved in my neighborhood organization. Just to give you a quick little background about it, as you maybe know, Minneapolis has a bunch of neighborhood organizations who are tasked with doing a lot of different things, but they kind of decide it on their own based on who's a member of that neighborhood organization. Sometimes they address business, other times they address housing issues. And ours currently, just to give you a little background, is there's about 13 people on the neighborhood board, and there's only one renter. Our neighborhood is 87% renters. Our neighborhood is 46% people of color. There's only one person of color on it, and so there's definitely, it's not really, a lot of the issues that we have in the neighborhood aren't really appropriately being addressed. That's at the neighborhood level. But so I've been involved in organizing, especially seeing as how it's not very representative. And by the way, a lot of folks on the board are landlords. And like the executive director doesn't live in Minneapolis, but she's a landlord in our neighborhood. But so I've been trying to get people who haven't been involved, whose voices aren't heard, to get heard. And so I've been meeting with a lot of folks, been going to different events and just like trying to build community. Some of the one event that I went to, I met a couple of Latina mothers who live in the neighborhood. And so I reached out to them because they want to get involved, and they've got issues. And so I reached out to them. We had a meeting with somebody from the community school, Whittier International, who had good relationships with a lot of the mothers. And we started talking about, like, what are some of the issues that are affecting the community, the Latino community, which, by the way, is 23% of Whittier. And they started hearing a lot of things about parks and stuff like that. But then we started getting into housing issues. And they told me a few different stories that we went and we door knocked and we found out a lot more about this. But one of the stories is that there is, in one of the properties that it's owned by this large rental property company, whose owner we don't know, you know, and that's sort of a problem with this, because it's not really personified at all. But they had somebody go in, the caretaker would go in and actually go through one of the residents' apartments. And they said, don't say anything. And they knew that they were undocumented. They said, don't say anything or else we'll report you. And so they feel very, like, helpless. They don't know if there's any way out of this. Another story, which I've heard a lot more of, is the idea that there's a couple property companies that have the building managers have put up a letter written in English saying you have 60 days to get out and because we're updating the property. And I talked to my friend who works at the school, and some of these kids would come up to him whose families were affected by this, saying, like, crying, saying, we won't be able to come back next year. Like, these are people who have lived there for 8 years sometimes, who have, that's their community, that's their neighborhood, and they're not given a chance to come back because Whittier, by the way, a little bit more context, there's a lot of development going on, and so the property value is going up, so people see a great opportunity in raising rents. And so that all kind of plays into this. I mean, you can speculate why they might do that, but so these folks are not given a chance to renew their leases. And so they have to, I mean, there's not a lot of affordable housing, especially for undocumented folks here in Minneapolis, so they have to go elsewhere. So they have to move to a different school district. So they have to make new friends. They might have to try to find a new job. And so hearing these stories is really, really troubling. And I mean, there's a lot of emotion behind it. And like I said, I really care about my neighborhood. And I care about the safety and the strength. And I like that it's interesting and that families live there. And these are a lot of the families that live there are undocumented neighbors. And I just want to make sure that, I don't know, a lot of the folks couldn't be here today because they're working and they can't get out of their work to be here to testify. And so I came down to do my best. And I'm sorry if I'm coming across a little nervous, but it's a pretty heavy issue, and I want to make sure that I'm doing a good job reporting it. And so that's there's a lot more to say, but I know you don't have a lot of time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bethany. I really appreciate it. You did a nice job of expressing, I think, a concern that I've heard certainly in that community, too. Any comments or questions for Mr. Bethany? Okay. Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Commissioner, I'm just wondering, the way we had kind of thought we would do this was this hearing today has two parts, and this first part is dealing with the issues of people facing discrimination because of documentation. The second part, it goes on to another issue dealing with families with disabled children. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to address just what you've heard so far in terms of the issue of discrimination, in terms of the legality or illegality, for example, of what we kept hearing about people being told they had to have a social security number in order to rent after they'd already been told they didn't, and then anyway, that whole example that we've heard about that being required in order to rent housing in Minnesota. And if you just introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin Lindsay. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to address you, Madam Chair, and the members of the committee. as to the question concerning discrimination in housing, individuals who are undocumented within the United States do have the ability to bring claims either under federal or state anti-discrimination laws, and the Minnesota Human Rights Act is no different. Individuals could bring a claim for housing discrimination if they are undocumented. The stories which have been relayed to the committee today would suggest that there might be enough to go forward to initiate some type of investigation as relates to the landlord's practices or the management company's practices. There is also a sense that individuals who might be concerned about information being forwarded from our office to other law enforcement agencies shouldn't have that respective concern. We have investigated matters on behalf of undocumented workers feeling that they have been discriminated, and that information goes forward within our respective office but then is not forwarded to any other law enforcement agencies.
Thank you, Commissioner. So I think you've clarified that, again, it's not legal to require a Social Security document as a condition of renting an apartment in Minnesota.
If the landlord requests information as relates to establish for purposes of running a background check, that may be a proper purpose. But what I heard being relayed here today was not really legitimate bona fide reasons for gathering information from applicants. And I heard of additional fees or damage deposits being requested. That seemed to suggest differential treatment upon the respective applicants, which would suggest the basis for a colorable claim under the Human Rights Act.
Thank you for that clarification. I appreciate it. Any questions or comments in the committee members? Okay, thank you. And if you can just stay around, we're going to go on to the second part of our testimony that deals with issues that deal with families with disabled children, and then we would like to have you comment again afterwards, reflecting on the information that you hear.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for staying with us. It's a little unusual to ask you, Commissioner, to do that, but we really appreciate it. Okay. We're going to hear from some individuals now who have had an issue that some of you heard about in our last legislative session. We passed a bill that said that Minnesota Housing Finance Agency would be looking at the issue of the difficulty of families who had a child with a severe disability that may cause them to be evicted or be threatened to be evicted from their property because of the child's disability. And we passed legislation to do a pilot program to look at possible home ownership opportunities for those individuals. And my understanding of that, what has happened since the legislation was passed and signed, is that that program has not been funded. Partly because it sounds like there was difficulty clarifying whether or not the request for proposal actually had that language in it. And there's a memo that we all should have that explains the commissioner asked that memo be circular, which says the information was there, but it was provided in a separate format. And so some concerns that certainly I have about how we're going to go forward and make sure that we do serve some of these families. Understanding that there's a desire to do that still, so I hope that will happen, but please check out that memo if you have any questions. We do have the opportunity later on to talk more about that. I think what we'll do right now, though, is we're going to go forward and hear the testimony regarding this issue of families who are renters and have experienced discrimination because they have a child with a disability. And so I want to start first of all with Mr. Abir Sakjama. If you would come forward and tell us your story. And I want to just say ahead of time, I know that a number of people have had to take off work to come today, and I really appreciate it. It means a lot to the committee to be able to hear firsthand testimony. So if you would just introduce yourself for the tape. Thank you.
Dear Madam and Chair, members of the committee, my name is Abdulrazak Chama. I am father of five children. I have autism. One of my children, who is a boy, is autistic, 11 years old. I have a problem for my housing. Also, my disability of my son, you know, caused a lot of distress and hardship in our family that affected my wife and I and children. My wife, you know, last 3 months she was hospitalized because she deals with daily basis for cleaning my son's internet when he sleeps, he's on diaper. And he just, the room he sleeps is in a kind of carpet. And if we don't do a sanitize daily basis for the room, that might be some, you know, disease can, you know, just develop. So the problem I have right now is two issues. One issue is the hardship and the problem of my son with autism that caused a lot of destruction, as I mentioned earlier. The second one is housing problem. Since 2008, we told to move out three apartments. And that three apartments, is the first one was in Hopkins. That time, my son, who was autistic, was 5 years old. And the reason the management told me that your son causing a lot of damage into house, and I have seen that your son is crawling on the windows, even though it was the first floor. And they gave us 60 days notice to move out. And we couldn't find where to live. We went to the legal aid to have legal advice about what we can do for our son. And really, it didn't work. Eventually, we got an apartment very low, you know, just in the South Minneapolis, two-bedroom. And finally, we were told to move out. And this is the third time I'm talking about within 8 years. Last month, I was sent to move out the apartment I'm living right now. After 20 days, I have to move out to vacate the unit. And the reason that my wife had a lot of problem cleaning for the using the chemicals, and she hospitalized it. And we requested, you know, our doctor to prescribe a letter saying that to change to the carpet into hard floor. And when we asked that, the landlord, you know, just he sent us a letter saying that you have to vacate this unit because your lease ended up. Your lease was month to month. And I tried to find out a legal issue about my rights, and I went every legal, you know, just to the legal aid. I spoke three different lawyers, and I went, I have a voucher for Section 8, which is I pay for 30% of my income. And they told me that we are not able to deal with this issue. It is better you to move out and to find another apartment. When I try to find out apartment, the first thing they ask me is, what's your previous history of rent of apartment? When they called to the where I used to live, they said no comment. When they ask, what is the status of that, you know, name, they say no comment. And every landlord has, you know, doubt. And they said, they told me many times, we are not able to, you know, just rent an apartment. Now, I have 20 days to vacate where I'm living, and my children all the time ask me where we are going to move, Dad. And I said, I don't know yet. And the problem, I spoke to the social worker of my son to get help. If there is any disability, you know, home units that facilitate for a short term where I can live. And they're still working, but they didn't find nothing. And I spoke yesterday about how it's, you know, just going on to find an apartment. And they said, you know, it's better to ask your landlord to have extension. She called my social worker to the management of where I'm living now to ask to, I guess, more 1 month extension. And they said, we already rented the apartment. And right now, I don't know what the future holds for us. But this problem, it's not this nowadays, it's not this month, but it's been last 8 years. We are living with the problem, the hardship for my own son. He, you know, just wake up in the middle of the night, waking the other children who go into school in 6 in the morning, and we, all the family wake up in 2 p.m. And the teachers called me from the school and they said, your children are sleeping every session, so how they sleep in the night? And other problem that I have, my son, he's, you know, just have a chronic problem with ear infection, sinus, constipation. And every week I go to the emergency. Every week the school he goes, they call me and they said, you have to take out because your son is not feeling okay. He's not able to be here because he's sick. And last 5 years I've been just struggling, you know, how I can get cure for the infection disease for my son, who is not, you know, just, as you may aware of, the autistic children does not respond to the antibiotics. And the only the children I have, if they get a cold or sore throat, I take to the, you know, just hospital, and they get antibiotics and they get, you know, just better. But my son who is autistic is a different story. And the time does not permit me to talk a lot about the issue and the problem I have. But in short, right now, I have, you know, problem for my, where I'm going to move. And the social worker, as I tell you earlier, asked me, what's the unit you may need? And I asked, my son, we use, you know, just a washing machine for his clothes and stuff like that, daily basis. So I said, my first priority, I have to have washing machine where can fit for that and accommodating. And I don't know, what should I do? Everywhere I go, I was told last time when I spoke to legal aid, the lawyers, they said, well, you have only one option. You have to vacate the apartment and you have to just file a claim that your landlord discriminating when you told him that to change to the carpet and to the hall floor. And my son doesn't talk. He actually, it looks like he's not belongs to Minneapolis where he born. And I have a lot of things to say, but the time does not permit to say, and this is my issue. Thank you and have a nice day.
Thank you, Mr. John. Appreciate your testimony. Any comments or questions from committee members?
Have any questions?
All right. Thank you. If you can just stay with us a little bit longer. Mariam? Ahmed? Welcome to the committee. And if you just introduce yourself, please.
Can you speak right into the microphone then, as loud as you can, please?
My name is Marian Ahmed, and I have four kids. Two boys and a girl. One is autistic, and as a Somali parent of children with autism, we always face with their situation with housing, having large families, an average of six children, I or more than one of the times with autism. Bosses are issues and spaces, safeties, compromising rental history, financial problem because we always replace what we break, and most of the time we don't even tell the landlord, we just replace them. And not only that, we also have called several of times, myself, police, and my son is not sleeping and up every night, waking up not only my children, our neighbors. We were living in a townhouse, and the neighbor called the police a couple of times, and I told them I cannot help. He has autism, and so we being told we have to move out or find our own house, and that's what most of the people and I always face, and the property damage, and nobody will take it if we put another applications or anything. And when they ask us how many people you guys were in the house, or when we talk about the disability, nobody will take it unless you have your own house. And the fear of the landlord who refused to fix it, the property and inspection, who might find that their property did not meet standard in another issue. The problem in the housing are the part of everyday of our stress, and all we need is shelter. We can accommodate our basic living standard and giving us space meets needs our children with autism. And it's not only me, it's everybody has that issue. Either you have one or two or three, it doesn't matter. It's very critical. You're up every night with your kids, you're taking care of them, and you're trying to protect that apartment or the house you rent. And how much can you be up? How much can you be, raised children with autism with no fear, not even think about it, but they're going to break it, what are you going to tell with the landlord? Do you have the money to replace it? You have to have a food, you have to have a clothes, and our expenses it's a lot, it's like triple than what we make. Please, if we can get help.
Thank you, Ms. Ahmed. I know that in your situation, when we talked before too, I think that you're one of the folks that was able to figure out how to wait to become a homeowner. Is that right?
Yeah.
Can you share that? What that difference that has made in terms of your life?
It made it a lot. It made a lot of difference. The reason I'm here, last year when I was here, we didn't have a house, and our credit was low, and I tried to work so hard to able to get a house, because there's no other reason I can make it, and it made a big difference. I have my own house right now. My son has his own room with the net bed, and he cannot get him out. He's only 4 years old. He cannot get him out to break anything. And also he has in the basement with swings and all that, and instead of crawling the kitchen looking for food, looking for something for the sensory, we have everything for him, for the sensories and anything he can get to. So the reason is, if you don't have none of that, have only three bedroom, no toys, nothing, what are they going to do? They're just breaking this stuff. And that's what people I know, and they're facing every day, daily basis. Some of the mom has issue with the blood pressure. Not only that, they cannot even talk about it, their problems, the stigma we have. We cannot even express or go and tell other mom who has kids with autism to share with the story. It's hard for us because in the back home we didn't have autism. We don't know what are they going to say to the neighbor, what are they going to tell you people. And only that, you're hiding that every day and having that issue and hiding with the neighbors and the friend and the family can cause a lot of damage.
Thank you. I wanted to have you tell us a little bit about that, and I do appreciate that because I think there's some hope when people can stabilize their housing through home ownership, which was part of our idea with the legislation that we passed last year, but unfortunately it was not funded. So thank you very much. There's another person I'd like to ask to come forward. Two more, and then we're going to hear from the commissioner again. So Abdul Duri, welcome to the committee, and I know you're one of the individuals who needed to take off work. I really appreciate it.
Thanks.
That you're able to come.
Hi, my name is Abdul Duria. I'm a father of two children diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder. I have an 8-year-old girl and a 10-year-old boy. I'm a stay-home dad, homeschooler. I quit my job about 4 years ago, and I gave up a career of about 10 years to stay home with my kids. Mm-hmm. And one of the main reasons for me to quit my job was my daughter's sleeping issue. Because normally, up to now, she sleeps 3 to 4 hours a night. So I'm very lucky if I can get 2 hours of sleep a night for the last 6 years. Mm. We live in 2-bedroom apartments, a tiny apartment. It's not enough for us right now. I mean, one room is a classroom. The living room is, I changed it to become a therapy center, a small therapy room where we have all our sensory equipment. We were kicked out from two apartment complex before because of the behavior of my children. As it is known, children with autism, they sleep less. They move a lot. So always there were complaints from our neighbors. So whenever it comes as a renewal time, nobody renews for us. I'm leaving this place right now. It is very small, but at least nobody was going to kick me out of it because at least the landlord understands autism. But right now the building is sold, and I don't know my fate. My contract is ending April. I don't know after April if I'm going to have a shelter. What I want to communicate from my testimony, the main thing is we as parents, we are working very hard to treat our children so that they can be productive members of the community instead of ending up on the receiving end. And the first thing for a human body, the basic necessity of a human body is a shelter. So we have an issue of a shelter. Myself, I cannot move from that place because I'm afraid. If I move to a bigger place, I don't know if they can keep me or they will kick me out. So I'm forced to live in this place, and even now, the place which I called it home, I don't know if it's going to be home after April or not. The issue is too big because only in the Somali community in the Minneapolis area, we have 1 out of 32 children who have autism. Nationwide, the statistics is 1 out of 88. So we are 4 times higher than the nationwide. So you can see, how the magnitude is. And another thing also, the state have so many programs for affordable housing, and priority is given to people with disability. But most of the time, the disability is considered a disability when it is for adult. Nobody consider a child with a disability or a family who have a child with a disability. So what we are looking for is just to be flexible, because autism is getting a bigger. So many, so many families that have children with autism, but nobody is considering them. Thank you very much. Lady, if you have a question for me.
Thank you, Mr. Jury. Really appreciate your coming and telling us your story. Any questions or comments from committee members? Okay, thank you very much. One more testimony, and then we're going to hear from the commissioner. Farhil Khalif, did you want to testify? Okay. Welcome to the committee. Just introduce yourself, please.
Hi, my name is Farhia Khalif. I'm a member of the Somali community. Thank you, Madam Chair, and member of the committees. I am here on support of this issue, and there's a big discrimination when it comes to immigrant community. This is not a new story, but as many of before me testified, this is very sad, but it's real. We live in a world that we are being treated because of you're not supposed to belong here, or you have to have the right documents to live and to have a shelter. When you hear parents are struggling because they have sick children, that is very, very real, because if you doesn't belong to this community because you are colored, because you are immigrant, or because you are not documented because you don't have a right paper for you to rent the place. So I'm sorry, I was just sitting back and listening all this. This is what we see every day. It's mm-hmm. nothing new. And I don't know if you guys heard these stories before, but discrimination is very real and very sad when a person doesn't have social security or being abused. Like before me, Mariano was mentioning, there's a lot of undocumented immigrants in the community who go through this daily basis. And there's a lot of Somali parents, like before me, the brother said, one in 32 child Somali kids are Somalis, and they're all in the state of Minnesota. And that's very high. Well, how many Somali children are not able to speak, to be here today, and to advocate for the rights to have them a place, safe place for their children? So this is very important where we all have to come together and united, because this can be you. They can be, you can have a child who's really sick and that you need a space for them to have a safe place. Or you know someone who you love that who are not who's immigrant, who's in this country, doesn't have the right documents. If you document these people, they may have a better place, but at this time we're talking about housing. And I hope you have your hearts and your minds you open today and to listen. This is one of few you hear that is around the state of Minnesota. So I just want to say thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Commissioner, I'm wondering if you could come forward and respond to this last set of concerns that have been raised. And I think after you, we might have one chance for one person who can talk a little bit about some solutions. But I want to, you know, if you have any comments regarding the issue of renters who are suffering the eviction sometimes because of children who have a serious disability that are causing problems in the housing. And appreciate your response to that.
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, my name is Kevin Lindsay. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. Under the Human Rights Act, it has been unlawful to discriminate on the basis of someone's disability and also their familial status under the housing discrimination provisions of the Human Rights Act. So to the extent that a landlord was making a decision on the basis of someone who has a disability within the rental unit, or they were making the decision on the basis of the status of the adult or guardian in relationship to the minor child, that would provide a basis under the Human Rights Act to proceed with some type of differential type of claim. And the stories which you've kind of heard here, they could either fall under either one of those rubrics under the Human Rights Act. Individuals have a year in which to bring a claim under the Human Rights Act. And to the extent that someone supports an individual who believes that they have been discriminated against the Human Rights Act, they also have the ability to bring a claim. for folks who are outside of the Twin Cities area, if they wanted to contact us, I'll give that number here. So that's 1-800-657-3704. And in the metropolitan area, it's 651-539-1121. There's also something probably individuals in the audience may be not aware of, and that they might feel some comfort in being able to share some of the difficulties that they're having in navigating the systems of government and ensuring that their children fully realize their dreams and hopes and aspirations. There is an Olmstead Task Force which has been meeting for quite some time. And if there are individuals who are interested in coming to testify and finding out more about the Olmstead Task Force, and that task force is really looking at a holistic, comprehensive view as relates to how the state of Minnesota can ensure that people with disabilities are fully engaged and are able to live meaningful lives as they see their life's dreams and mission and ambition to be. And we would be more than happy to help facilitate people getting connected to the Olmstead Task Force. There was a comment which was made as it relates to adults having some type of preference as it relates to kids because of disability. There's obviously a larger environmental bias. You could ask my kids, is that the parents probably get more time and attention? But there is no preference under the law as relates to preferential treatment of an adult over a child. Okay. These issues as relates to replacement or repair, the law, federal and state, does not allow a landlord to charge an additional damage deposit or put additional burdens on an individual because of their status of an individual being an individual with a disability. It's obviously appropriate for a landlord to recover the cost of any damages which are incurred or happen during the course of a tenancy. But to charge an additional burden upon someone is inappropriate under state and federal law. We recently have been going around the state talking about assistance animals and use of guide dogs. And I think that that has been very helpful to landlords and individuals who provide public accommodation services such as hotels, motels, to individuals with disabilities. And I appreciate the legislature 2 years ago aligning the state law with the federal law as relates to guide dogs. I think that that has been very helpful for everyone in having a consistent standard and knowing where the law is.
Mr. Commissioner, I'm not sure people quite know what that law is. Can you just very briefly describe what the rights are under the law with the guide dogs?
Sure. So to the extent that someone has a guide dog and they wish to access a restaurant or a hotel, there are a couple of questions which can be asked as relates to the individual who has that guide dog, and that is this guide dog for the purposes of providing assistance? And if the person says yes to that question, the next question could be asked, what type of services does the assistance animal provide? That's for the guide dogs. And previously, Minnesota law was inconsistent with federal law because it put additional burdens upon the individual with disabilities, and that positioned the state in a disadvantageous position with the federal government.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, if anybody else has comments or questions, but I did want to ask you, we heard one description of a person, Mr. Jama, who wanted to make a change within his apartment to accommodate his son's need, to change a floor with a rug to a hardwood floor. I'm aware of another situation, a family with an autistic child who wanted to place a lock on a door high enough so that her 8-year-old daughter could not run out the door. And she described in previous another situation how that child actually some late hour ran out into very cold weather, and she was not allowed to do that, and by the landlords. And I'm just wondering, does our law on disability rights in terms of housing speak to this issue of making some accommodation in the housing for the safety of a person. For in this case, it's autistic children. It could be other things too. But does the law protect a parent or a person who's in charge of that adult being able to make accommodations without being evicted, or does it not cover that?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the law does provide at the federal and the state level for a discussion as relates to what might constitute a reasonable accommodation, and it is a very fact-specific inquiry as relates to the respective circumstances. The initial one, which you had described about putting a carpet on the floor, there would be a balancing as relates to what would be the cost to the particular landlord in that respective situation. To the extent that the cost to the landlord is de minimis, it's probably more likely that the accommodation is going to be held as being reasonable. To the extent that it's more obtrusive, it changes the aesthetics of the housing area or the rental unit, or it's costly, then it probably is going to be an accommodation which may be viewed as being unreasonable. The issue as it relates to a lock on a door is a very interesting question, because there are advocates in various state-run facilities or facilities which receive funding from the state in which that might be viewed as limiting the ability of access for an individual. So that would be one in which you would be looking at a wide variety of factors as it relates to the key, the lock, who might have access. I would have to know more about that particular situation. Okay. But we would be balancing the right of egress for that person as it relates to their safety as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I know in the case of the request to change the hardwood floor, the renter was going to pay the cost of that. There was not going to be a cost to the landlord. And I think your comment of what it might change in terms of aesthetics is what you're saying. There'd have to be some discussion about that. And I know in the case of the mother who wanted to put a safety lock higher than her daughter's reach, again, she was willing to pay for that. It was not going to be a cost to the landlord, per se.
Madam Chair, I think those are all interesting facts which would be weighed by us as a neutral fact finder, but we would probably ask for the other side before rendering mm-hmm. an opinion. But sure, I think all of those things do suggest that it's probably a de minimis cost to the landlord, and probably would suggest that it's a reasonable accommodation.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I think we have just one more person who wanted to address the committee very briefly. Commissioner, thank you so much for your flexibility. It really means a lot that you were here, and I think hopefully the folks who are here have had a chance to take your number down and be able to access the resources of your department.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. And I think that was, Javier. You came. Okay, I guess I should, can you give us just a minute or two of time? You were on the list, so I'm going to go ahead and take you, Javier Reyes. You just introduce yourself and briefly just tell us what your story is.
Good afternoon.
Mi nombre es Javier. Somos cuatro familia, mi esposa y mis dos niños.
I'm Javier, and I have a spouse and two children.
Bueno, quiero contarles que he estado en un apartamento hace como dos meses, pero el problema que he tenido ahí que tenía que se metía el agua cuando nevaba. Tuve por cinco años viviendo ahí, se metía el agua cada vez que nevaba.
I've been living in the apartment for 5 years, and the issue that I want to assess right now is about when it's snowing, the water goes into the apartment.
Lo comunicamos muchas veces a la oficina y nada más iban y limpiaban o nosotros mismos limpiábamos.
I have talked to the office and they would go in there and just clean it, or we would clean it ourselves.
El aire acondicionado no funcionaba bien, estaba frío, tenía que comprar calentones para tener extra porque se ponía muy frío, y la solución de ellos decían que no podían arreglarlo el de nosotros porque tenían que arreglar todo el edificio.
The heater would not work, and what I would do is just buy small heaters to heat the apartment up, and they wouldn't do anything about it.
Problemas con la estufa también, se explotaba de repente nada más.
Problems with the stove, it would explode sometimes.
lo arreglaron dos veces y volvía.
They fixed it 2 times and they would always come back.
La tercera vez rompió el recipiente donde estaba cocinando mi esposa.
The third time when my wife was cooking, the can or the had popped out.
Aún así no hicieron nada.
Either when that happened, they didn't do anything about it.
La solución era que nos podíamos mover si queríamos, pero por no tener seguro social no podíamos movernos tan rápido.
The solution was either to move out, but I didn't have a social security number, so I couldn't move.
Y pues después del piso de arriba se mojaba el baño.
And then the second floor on the bathroom, it would get wet all over.
Y se estaba cayendo, casi le hacían bolsas de agua en el techo.
You could see on the top of the walls, you could see like water and all those things dropping out.
Nunca vinieron y como yo lo puedo hacer, pero por eso pagamos una renta para que nos den un servicio.
They never came to fix that, but I could do it, but that's why we pay our own rent so they can come and fix those issues.
Y ya que no vinieron, lo tuve que hacer yo, repararlo, poner pasta, pintarlo y dejarlo como nuevo.
Since they didn't come, I had to clean and do all the stuff and make it look nicer.
Les comuniqué, pero no hubo ni un descuento por lo que hice.
I told them about what I have done and they didn't even give us a discount.
Ahora tengo como 2-3 meses hemos estado buscando dónde movernos porque nos movimos con mi suegra, pero
we have been looking for 2 or 3 months ago. We have moved with my spouse's mother, but we can't look anywhere.
Y hemos metido como 5 veces aplicaciones.
We have put in applications 5 times.
Y siempre les he comentado al final de la conversación de que miramos el departamento que no tengo un seguro social.
At the end of when we look at the apartments, I always say I don't have a social security number.
Pero que tengo IT number, que si puede seguir la aplicación, y me han dicho que sí.
But I have told them that I have an IT number and I told them, can I put it? And they say yes.
Después que pagamos la aplicación, $40-$50.
Once I pay the application, $40-$50.
Nos dicen que no aplicamos porque no tenemos un seguro social, pero se ha perdido los $50
o
los 40.
They say that I don't qualify because I don't have a social security number and all the $40 and $50 have been all be gone.
He perdido $425.
I have lost $450.
Y ahora apenas encontramos una casa.
Today we have found a house.
Con una persona de un precio de $3,300.
We have found it for $1,300.
Por si se dan cuenta, el precio es un poco, a lo mejor tal vez para mí caro, para ustedes un poco cómodo, pero
for
no el mejor lugar.
It's very expensive for you guys. It might not be that expensive.
Pero no el mejor lugar, y el techo de la sala se está cayendo, y le he dicho al dueño que yo lo voy a arreglar y lo he arreglado.
It's not very nice, neat. The roof of the kitchen has coming falling apart. I have been telling the owner.
Y dijo que sí, nada más le dije que no tenía seguro social, pero ahora, y hoy estamos a 5 y no ha arreglado los demás detalles de la casa, pero tengo que aguantar porque no tengo otra opción.
I told him that I would be able to fix the kitchen's roof, but then I don't have a social security number. He said it was okay, and since now it's December 5th and he hasn't fixed anything from the house.
Y le llamé y le dije que cuándo terminaría, y me preguntó que si yo ya había terminado de arreglar el techo.
I called him and asked when is he going to have the house ready. He told me, when are you going to finish the kitchen?
Ya lo terminé y él todavía no termina.
I already finished the kitchen. He hasn't started yet.
Así, y es triste tener que ir a estar metiendo aplicaciones y que te engañen, que cuando tú hablas con la verdad, que no tienes seguro social y te engañan y solamente toman tu dinero. Y a veces, por eso a veces muchas personas mienten para poder aplicar para una casa.
It's sad to see that you have put a lot of applications, and when you come up to the truth saying that you don't have a social security number, they just deny you or just play around with you. And it's sad just because there's a lot of families that go through this situation, and sometimes you have to lie about it just to get to rent a place.
Y es triste estar en un lugar donde tus hijos no pueden jugar, leer como en tu propia casa.
And it's sad to see that your children can't read or do stuff like if it was your own home.
Así. Y espero sirva de algo esto y puedan hacer algo al respecto.
And hopefully this helps and it could be do something for this issues.
Gracias, que tengan buenas tardes.
Thank you and good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Reyes. I really appreciate that you were able to make it here. Any questions, comments? Any members? Okay. Well, we come to the end of the testimony of individuals with the concerns. And I don't know. There's one person who's requested to talk with us very briefly about a solution that came forward in our last housing committee. If members want to stay just 5 minutes, I've asked her to be very brief. But we were talking about this earlier, Ms. Watliff Phillips. If you would just very briefly share with the committee an idea that you have, and then we're going to adjourn the meeting, and I appreciate members being willing to stay a few more minutes.
Chair Clark and committee members, I'm Sue Watliff Phillips. I'm the Executive Director of MICA, the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing, and owner and president of Integrated Community Solutions, also a retired psychologist. As I've been before this committee many times over the last 30 years, and as people of faith, we believe that we need to treat other people the way we'd want to be treated. Obviously, what you've heard here today, we would not want any member of our family or friends to be treated that way. We should not have anyone in our community being treated this way. Clearly, we need to enforce, and I've talked about this continuously in testimony, discrimination and not following through on our civil rights laws has certainly impacted many of the folks that have been testifying here. We need to enforce those laws, but the department needs money to be able to do that. So we really need to take a look at what we're doing with our resources. As you all know, we passed the Home Bill, Housing Opportunities Made Equitable, the Home Law. In that law, it provides for home ownership training, so people get that training that's specifically done by folks within their own culture. Now, while not all the folks are going to move into home ownership, for many of the families that do have children with disabilities, this could be a very good first step in moving forward with that. Also, while people are in that home ownership training, which is a longer-term home ownership training, they learn all of their rights as tenants and where to go if they do have complaints, too. So that's done within their own language and within their own culture, and we believe that this is a wonderful opportunity to help in assisting people in this situation. As we heard from Budget and Economic, the Office of Management and Budget today, is that one of the things that's stopping the growth in our state right now is housing and not having enough affordable housing and home ownership. Certainly, the investment into the home law of $100 million, which we are asking for, will help us move forward in helping people move from apartments into home ownership, opening up new apartments, as well as creating jobs and providing an opportunity for people to develop wealth and move on with their lives and take care of their kids as they want to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And that's the legislation that you all had a hand in last year. So. Appreciate you just reviewing that for us. Committee members, unless there's any further discussion, Representative Hertas.
I just wanted to comment on the issue about the door locks out of reach. There's fire safety issues. There has to be two forms of egress out of bedrooms, a window and a door. And that's probably an issue that makes a rental unit non-compliant with local safety ordinances.
Do you know, Representative Hurtas, in this case, I recall the testimony, the mother wanted to make it not inaccessible for her or another adult, but for this child to be able to let herself out into the cold. And do you think that that covers?
Well, in the event of fire, if the parent had to evacuate and the child is trapped inside, doesn't have any ability to get out of the bedroom, so... Usually locking doors have what's called panic hardware, which can be locked from one side, but if you're trying to leave, it opens it whether it's locked or not. So okay. I realize these are special circumstances with autistic children, and in the security risk, but you know, maybe the safety ordinance needs to be looked at in terms of special mitigating circumstances or whatever. But that is a risk.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Okay, committee members, unless there's anything else, I really appreciate your being here today. And this is the last committee that I'll be chairing. Housing, I hope we get to see many of you others if we go forward with any of these issues in the future. I know the Housing Committee will now be part of another committee, and I'm looking forward to working with them on that. Committee is adjourned.